Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about, catch up with again, and some topics and some rants. And I guess the agenda today for boxing is the truth. That's what the agenda is for us.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking the truth. And you know what? I'm going to go... Before we get into this past weekend fights and we talk about upcoming fights, I want to talk a little bit about something that let me bring out the shoebox here, Gabriel, real quick.
Hey, take your time. We got 2 hours.
And we have George Willis and Alan Sanchez is going to be joining us as guests here on Leaving the Ring. Alan Sanchez is going to have his shot at Luis Collazo, who's a true contender. A very tough test. It can go either way for both of these gentlemen. So we have a chance to speak to Alan, who's from the Bay Area, and he's from Fairfield, California, and hear a little bit about his take and, you know, what's the strategy of going against a veteran like Luis Collazo. But before we get that, I'm getting out the shoebox here on Leaving the Ring Radio. And if you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Or don't forget to download the app on your iPhone or on Android. All you got to do is text in the letters LIITR, then boxing, or the whole word, leave it in the ring. Anyways, let's get down to it here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Again, 347-215-7598. Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here, bringing out the shoebox. All right, here it is. Canelo Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather Jr. Been hearing a lot about this fight, which is kind of weird because, you know, Brandon Rios and Manny Pacquiao is a really good fight. Here's a real competitive fight. Some guys may think that Manny is, you know what, he may not be the same Pacquiao anymore because of the destruction that he had on his chin against Juan Manuel Marquez. But also, too, with Brandon Rios, is he fit? Is his style fitting for Pacquiao? Doesn't have much head movement. He's going to be straight up and down. He's going to come forward, and he's going to be there to hit. But not a lot of fans are talking about that fight. What they're talking about is the Canelo and Mayweather fight. Now, I talked to a lot of fight fans, and here are two major things. And actually, one of the major things just came out, I believe it was yesterday, the unofficial weigh-in for Floyd Mayweather and Saul Alvarez. But two topics here, Gabriel, and jump in whenever you feel like jumping in on this topic here. One is the comparisons of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Melvin Taylor. Please, stop using that comparison. It's stupid, okay? These are two different, completely different fighters. For one, Floyd fights nothing like Taylor. For two, Saul Alvarez does not have the power, the aggressiveness that Julio Cesar Chavez did, okay? This is a completely different fight. The scenario of people using that whole thing, that fight as a scenario of thinking, well, it's going to be like that type of fight. No, it's not. It's going to be far from that kind of a fight, people. You know, so stop trying to tell me that it's going to be all over again, Chavez versus Taylor. It's not going to happen. Two different mindset fighters. Floyd doesn't sit in the pocket too long. He's not one of those risky guys. Come on, you guys have watched. I mean, if you're a Floyd Mayweather fan, you know this. He doesn't sit there all the time. If you're a Canelo fan, you know he's not that aggressive. He takes his time. He's methodical. He's not going to, you know, just go in there and take hits to get one of his big bangs. That's not Canelo's temperament. So that whole scenario there, it's just got to be out the door.
Yeah, the styles don't even mix at all. I mean, I've been saying this the whole time, and I'm going to stick with it all the way to the end. Bet the draw. They're very similar mentalities. Canelo is a counterpuncher. He's a guy that waits for his spots. He waits till you're exactly where he wants you to be, and then he'll attack. Yeah, he goes off with some combinations. But really, he's looking for that opportunity for you to make a mistake or be in that spot where he wants you to be. Then he'll go. But he's not a guy that's going to be pile-driving forward, cutting off the ring. He's not great at cutting off the ring and making it smaller and smaller. And making you pay more and more. I mean, he's decent at it, but he's not great at it. He's certainly no Chavez at it. They don't, you know, his body attack isn't the same as a Chavez senior, not even close. Just all around, he's not that guy. He's not a hyper aggressive person, in my opinion. As a fighter,
Junior is a lot more closer to his father's style than Canelo is.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I think that's fair. And Floyd is a guy at his age, and you look at the weight disparity, 150.8 for Floyd, 166.8, I believe, for I could be off on the points on that, but 150 to 166, you know, 30 days out from the fight. Canelo is going to be suffering trying to get down to that 152. I said it at the time, and people were like, oh, you know, it's only 1.5 pounds less. Every boxer will tell you the last 2-3 pounds are the worst, and now you're adding 2 more pounds. To lose for the guy that is, you know, the champion after all in this scenario. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but it is what it is. It's, you know, none of the rules really apply to a big fight like that. But then you look at Floyd's offense, and it's at a premium. You know, he did a lot of moving, even against Robert Guerrero. He didn't sit there. He stayed in the pocket, but it's like one shot, two shots, grab you, or one shot and get out of there. There's not a lot of standing in the pocket and just trading and waiting to take a shot and coming right back.
The opportunities is just not going to be there. I mean, that's what's kept him undefeated. Kept his, you know, marbles in his head is being intelligent enough to know that, you know what, that's not my style. I'm not going to dare to be great. I'm just going to dare to be undefeated. And that's where he stands. Now, the whole weight issue, we talked about this, and you know, the thing is that you got a lot of folks right now acting very surprised about Canelo still weighing at 166. I'm talking maybe second, third show into leaving the ring when we started it. I used to call Floyd Mayweather the Houdini of boxing because he could play these magic tricks to fans and to fighters and to promoters to really make them believe that they have the upper hand. With Canelo Alvarez, here was the trick. Here was the sleight of hand here. The sleight of hand was when Floyd Mayweather and his uncle and his dad were saying, like, we're not going to jump up. We're going to stay at 147. We're not going to move. And then Canelo got in his head, well, wait a minute, he's not going to move. Well, let me propose a catch weight. And that's when Floyd said, ta-da, that's what I wanted, guys. I wanted you to make the suggestion, the notion that, you know, I didn't want to move anywhere and make you guys feel like you guys have the advantage. When we've said this, Canelo's body frame, his style and his punching power is more of a 147. He just can't make that weight. And he's really struggling to make that 154. So the April Fool's was on Canelo. I'm not surprised at all that Canelo is weighing 166. And we've seen this time and time before. A fighter that starts concentrating in his weight means he's not concentrating on a game plan. And that's the worst thing you can do, especially when you're facing Floyd Mayweather. Now, if there's any fight out there that we can make a comparison, let's compare Juan Marquez. What did he do to Juan Marquez? He made him jump up. He made him move up in weight. What did Juan have to do? He had to worry about gaining weight. That's what he had to do. And the same thing with Canelo. You know, he's patient. He wants to be the counterpuncher. He wants to look beautiful when he throws punches. But at this moment, he's concentrating now, is losing that weight. And Floyd has all the upper hand in this fight at this moment. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts? 347-215-7598. Call in and see what you think about this whole Houdini of boxing, Floyd Mayweather.
Well, I was, you know, reading about Houdini. You know, he's not. People think of him as he's a magician, but was an escape artist. And the biggest thing that he did, I mean, most every, actually not most, but all of the stunts that he performed, were controlled by him, were conceived by him. The milk can escape, the straitjacket, he was the handcuff king. That was his claim to fame. You can put him in anything and get out of it. And that's Floyd. He creates the event. He decides the rules of the, you know, of the challenge, and then they execute accordingly. He's a brilliant boxer, so they're able to design, you know, challenges, but he's sure to get through them because he's so skilled. And not many people maybe would get through all of these. Yeah, you can't say, you know, maybe. I mean, he's undefeated. I'll give him that. But he picks them at the right time, and I think, like any good promoter, they know that the time eventually, you know, makes people forget the details, and all they remember is the victory. Tim Bradley will experience that. If he gets past Marquez, especially, people will forget about they'll forget about the Pacquiao loss, or, you know, in everybody's mind loss, or most people's, and they'll look differently, I think, on the Provodnikov fight as a character builder rather than a flaw exposer. History's kind of has that way of being, you know. But with this fight, you know, I'm not saying it's not great, but it is interesting that you bring up the fight because, you know, now we're 30 days out, so there's new news. But before that, I mean, there was the press conference. It just seems like this is the only fight everybody's talking about. I think that Pacquiao-Rios is a much more compelling fight that either man can win. I know people think that Rios is just a punching bag, and if Mike Alvarado can outbox him, then anybody can. But these tweener weights, you know, Pacquiao is not really, to me, a full welterweight. Floyd has kind of grown into a full welterweight. 150.8, you know, I think it just says that 47 is his natural weight. There's still question marks for me about Pacquiao above 140 pounds or at 140 pounds even. And with Rios, he's a guy that's still young, still kind of exploring just exactly where he fits. And I think he's going to do just fine in preparing for it. And he's going to ask some serious questions of Pacquiao, who is coming off of a brutal knockout. You know, Rios lost clearly, but he lost valiantly against Alvarado in that rematch. So I don't see where anybody
a massive beating, in my opinion. You know?
No, his legs buckled for the first time, but yeah, you're right. So I think it's a very compelling fight. I mean, both are in a sense, but I still say bet the draw just because of everything that's riding on, and what the whole point of Canelo versus Floyd is to build a new pay-per-view star. It isn't necessarily it's Oscar versus Floyd all over again, you know, or Chavez versus Oscar. Only Floyd's not that far down the road when those fights happen for Oscar or for Chavez Sr. I don't think he's looking to sacrifice himself, and I don't think it does Golden Boy, Heyman, or their galaxy of stars and burgeoning stars any good to have a loss on Floyd Mayweather's record at this point. But a draw, so you can say this is the only guy to not lose to Floyd, I think that could be acceptable. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, we're going to find out on September 14th. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. All right, let's talk about this past week in fights. Showtime, we had a heavyweight who took bronze for the United States. He was the wild card. Got into boxing really, really late. But, you know, the guy's been putting in a lot of work. And he's been showing up to impress. You know, in the beginning, he was a little shaky. He was getting dropped. And we're talking about Dante Wilder. We've had Dante Wilder here on Leaving the Ring on our Prospect Watch. And his size and his reach advantage. And you know what? As much criticism as we can give Golden Boy, I got to say, they've been moving him. I'm not sure whether it's been carefully or it's been more of a, you know, I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for here? More of a, not a careful move, you know, not developing the guy, but more of not sure where he stands, you know, and rightfully so. You know, like I said, he's been on shaky legs a few times. But, you know, he is a guy that really didn't surround himself with boxing 24/7. He wasn't the norm fighter where he grew into it because of a family. But he's slowly but surely learning on the job, in the office, in the ring. You know, his performance with a knockout on past weekend, I was impressed. I don't know how you thought about it, Gabriel, but I was really impressed with him.
You know, he's getting there. I mean, you know, it's not like he's making the same mistakes that he did, you know, several fights ago, you know, even in his last fight. I think that It's hard to say, you know, because you got to go, where was the White Wolf, you know, in all of this? You know, he's gone the distance in losses, you know, back-to-back losses, and been in the fight, had some pride about him. He's got some skills, certainly. He's always been a very good heavyweight. He's a former heavyweight champ or a title holder. And Wilder just, I mean, absolutely obliterated him, put him on his back, made him do the leg shakes, never pretty to see.
Made him do the Fernando Montiel dance.
Same thing. Yeah, I mean, it was that. I always forget the name exactly what they call that. But man, it was spooky. And nobody does that to Sergey Lavrovich. You know, no one does that. I mean, they maybe take him deep and then, you know, damage him and finish him off, or they might put him down. But they're not going to just blow him out with one shot like that. And okay, maybe he was done, but he didn't show signs of that to me in the Hellenius fight. I mean, he didn't look great to me in the Bryant Jennings fight, but I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, this guy needs to retire. I just didn't feel that. In this fight, people are immediately calling him shot, and I think it's a way to take a shot at Deontay Wilder, and I don't agree. I think we know his story, so we can't keep forgetting it. You know, we only had like, what, 13, somewhere like 20, you know, amateur fights.
Like 26 or 28 amateur fights.
Most of them were the Olympics trials, a good majority of the significant ones were in the Olympics. I mean, he went a long way real fast. And, you know, they're bringing him along nice and slow. And I like it. I like the brain trust that's around him. I like the people that they do bring in to kind of talk to him and work with him. He's had a chance to work with former world champions or current world champions. They're honing this guy. They want him to be the guy in the future. And I think if they keep moving along at the slow pace, they'll be fine. I think the question is where do you take him next? You know, that's going to be the hard part. I mean, how hard do you match him? Is he ready for the top 20 or is he ready for the top 10? What do you think?
I don't think he's ready for the top 10, maybe for the 20s. I just say keep moving them the way they've been moving them. Let them develop. You know, like we just mentioned right now, he had 26, maybe 28 fights, and that's included with the Olympics. There's a lot of growth with this kid. He's strong-minded, and you can see that he's almost like a sponge. He kind of consumes everything. He sponges all up, and he's learning on the job. I hate to see kids that have potential, but then get a bit rushed, where that potential is just kind of just beaten out of them, where you never get to see the greatness out of them. So I know Golden Boy is trying to make the best fights out there possible for the fans and trying to make every fight really extra exciting, but sometimes you got to savor some for the late run. And that's one of the fighters they got to kind of savor with right now. Allow these other fighters to kind of walk out of the sport where Dante Wilder can really make a name for himself 2 to 3 years from now. I think Gabriel's mic is off.
It is. I think you got to avoid the Klitschko's. I think you got to let them develop, keep marinating, and you know maybe if at the end of Vladimir's career, I don't think Vladimir's ever going to look like he's punchy. It's not like he takes a bunch of punishment at this point. He kind of just has his way and does his thing. So
let's be honest. I mean, Vladimir, his size, his IQ in boxing. It's what's keeping him in the game, I'm not taking nothing away from him, you know, because I think he's by far one of the best fighters that we have in the world right now, one of the best heavyweights, definitely of this generation and stuff. But the pick of the crop of heavyweights that we have right now, they're not that competitive. They just can't seem to solve the puzzle, which really the size is what really makes the difference when they get stepping in the ring with them. You know, they don't know how to adjust to his reach. They don't know how to get to his body. They don't know, you know, a lot of heavyweights nowadays don't have excellent footwork. They don't even have good head movement. They kind of dismiss all of that. Heavyweights nowadays, they grew up watching Mike Tyson, so they want to be like Mike Tyson. They want to land those big shots, but they don't go back and watch Mike Tyson in his earlier career when he had great head movement. He had great hand speed. He pivoted hard so that he can make you, so he could slip your jab and he made you pay for it. Those are little things that a lot of heavyweights nowadays, they don't want to work on, or they're just lazy at trying to get to get those extra tools in. You know, you got to work at it to be great. And right now, the way I see a lot of heavyweights, not just the American heavyweights, but all around the world, is everybody at a heavyweight is in a rush to run up the mountain to be king of the hill. It doesn't work like that. And Vladimir Klitschko is taking great advantage of it, and why not? He should.
Yeah, I think that at this point, you know, just the slow marinate and looking at the landscape. I mean, there's a lot of good fights to be made, and we've said this for a while. Here's the thing, though, is we don't know how good Wilder is, right? I mean, he hasn't really been tested. I've seen him dropped. I've seen him tested. I mean, Harold Sconyers, I saw that fight in person, dropped him at Fantasy Springs, like his first fight at Fantasy Springs. He's had three. And he got up, he put the guy down four times, all told, and got the win, you know, got the stoppage win. And so I've seen him tested. I know he's got some depth of character. And he knows how to come back, even if the whiskers might be, you know, not quite all there. Although I think that can kind of change over time as you get more and more used to being hit, particularly at the professional level, you learn to steel yourself a little more. You know, early on, you're dealing with nerves and calming down and just remembering how to do certain basic things, and you're fighting grown men who are much more experienced than you. That's always tough, because even if a guy's got 10 fights and you've got 10 fights, that guy's probably got more amateur fights than you are if you're starting late like he is. So I think the thing is, do you put him in, like Steve suggested, putting him in with Malik Scott, somebody that'll take him deep and give him rounds, but that you're not worried about him knocking your guy out. The worry is that you may have a stinker long boxing performance. And that's you know, even if you win, that's, you know, especially if you win, that's going to be better than a knockout loss, where you put him in, you know, and that kind of risk, you're going to be putting him in with, say, a Robert Hellenius, maybe even like a David Price, although I don't think they would go near that fight right now. Steve also suggested Derek Chisora, which I think is a really fun fight. That's a fight that I think is really appropriate. You know, Chisora is not a one-punch knockout guy, but he will go in there and be all over you and give you pressure all night long and give you kind of a moving target that's going to be a problem. That would be an interesting fight. I don't know if that's next, but
I wouldn't recommend it, to tell you the truth. I wouldn't recommend any of those fights right now, just because, you know, listen. One thing that a fighter needs to learn is to have confidence. They need to build their confidence, and they need to believe in themselves in order to be great. And right now, I think he's slowly but surely believing in himself. I don't think he's at that point, though, where he truly believes that he can be great. It's a process, and we got to remember he started late in the game. So that process is just going to take a little bit longer. I just say feed him what is necessary, you know, feed him what's going to build him. His confidence.
Dudes, people like Steve says, I don't like this fight. And a few other people said they didn't like this fight. And I know he's got a loss, but he has a few losses. And if he's not, I don't think is too far gone. Why isn't a Michael Grant fight an interesting fight? I think in terms of that guy was at one time the heavyweight hope. I think it's got storyline. I think it's kind of interesting, and Grant knows how to extend a fight. I mean, he wasn't too far off that he was giving Tomasz Adamek some serious trouble late, and he was a viable opponent. I don't see why he wouldn't be a viable opponent for somebody like Deontay Wilder, especially with his height, his experience, his reach, all the problems that he presents, and he does bring a booming right hand.
You know what? I wouldn't mind that fight. Actually, I think that is a good fight. He's a big guy.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's a big guy. I think he will give Deontay Wilder some rounds. And it would also give him a confidence builder, you know, as well.
He needs the rounds. I think that's the bottom line. He needs rounds, and not just quality rounds in the gym. I mean, talking to guys close to him, I mean, it was only like two fights ago that they were barely starting to see him just relax in the ring during training camp and just box, just simply box. That's rare. For him to do, you know, it was at that time. Now he's learning how to just do that and just went around by, you know, just tap, tap, tap with the jab, throw the right hand, maybe a little hook every once in a while. I need to take my own advice and not look at Twitter while I'm talking on the radio. This is a little bit of drama happening surrounding me. But what else is new?
Right.
So, you know, sorry, I lost my train of thought. While I've done that, I kind of just want to, if I seem a little off, about like, well, I don't know what, 3 o'clock, 3:45, somewhere in there. I found out that someone that I knew, a boxing fan friend of mine, died. So I'm a little off tonight. There's a guy named Steve, and he and his brother-in-law invited me up. They're friends with my brother Dan, and they invited me up here to the Bay Area for Pacquiao Mosley to watch fights. And so like serious business dudes, financial guys, and you know the place they invited me to was this palatial mansion. And we watched the fights, and they were just regular boxing folks. You know, Steve is a really good guy. They both were talking about the good old days, and that while we're watching all the fights, they had this loop of knockouts that Steve had created. It was like 3 or 4 tapes he had brought with him. It was like their pre-fight ritual. And there's all these great fights that all end in knockout, and just fight after fight. And we were telling stories and eating and hanging out and drinking and watching TVs. They had like, I think it was a horse race that day, you know, one of the Triple Crown. And so we were watching that. But these guys were diehard. He's from Detroit. And he was a huge Tommy Hearns fan. They both were. They were all at all of Tommy's big fights. And so it was interesting watching Pacquiao Mosley with two guys that had been there for boxing in its heyday. And Steve, this is the thing that sticks out, and I'll just kind of get off of this, but it's just kind of on my mind. He was such a diehard Tommy Hearns fan. Both of them were. When they talked about the fights, it was like they were Tommy talking about the fights, whether they won or lost. They just had such great emotion. But in this guy's wallet was just one picture. It wasn't his wife or his kids. It was Tommy Hearns. It was like an old clipping of Tommy from – I don't even remember which fight. But it was a picture of Tommy Hearns, and he had it like laminated. It was old, and folded up in his wallet. And I just thought that's a real boxing fan right there. So a tin can out to you, Steve. You know, he'll be missed.
Yeah, it always sucks, man, to lose a boxing friend. You know.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, you know. There's somebody that you just meet once. You know, and I've met his brother-in-law a few times. Every time I come up and visit. My brother Dan, and I actually live in San Francisco now, but I only got to meet him once, and he had left an indelible impression. A hell of a guy, and just good people, you know, just good boxing people. And
absolutely,
so, yeah. Let's take a caller.
Yeah, let's take a caller in. Let's get CT is always on first. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
Good, brother. How you doing? Thank you.
All right. I'm looking forward to the HBO triple header this weekend, but I'm definitely interested in the co-main event and the main event itself. I think Barker and Gill is a very interesting fight, and I think Kovalev and Cleverly is a pretty good fight as well. Looking forward to the Gill and Barker fight. I think it's pretty much a 50-50 fight. Barker's got good timing. I think he has very good upper body movement, and I think he has good right hand. The thing is, I think and winner for Gills is his work rate. I think he's like a pinball machine. He kind of goes left to right, back and forth. And he has pretty good tight defense on the inside, which Barker does too. He goes guard up real high. But the thing is, Barker doesn't throw enough punches. And I think going through the fight, I think it's going to work for Gill. And I think he's going to win a close decision. What do you guys think on that fight?
Yeah, I like Gill's pressure. I like his volume.
His volume is what sells it for me, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think Barker's a little bit passive. He seems a little more aggressive in his last fight, but I think that was kind of a fight for him to get to be that and to get that kind of feel back. You know, so I just think that he kind of plays into what – I think it's a nice style matchup, but I think he plays into Gil's strengths. He's the A side here. So I just looking at it, I think particularly his last – I don't know, 5-6 fights. He just seems to be fighting out of his head, you know. Maybe even a little bit further back than that, you know, a couple fights leading into his title win. His volume, he's just constant pressure. He comes on strong late. I like Gill. I feel real strong in that pick. By decision, though, I don't think he stops Barker.
Yeah, he seems to be in real good shape all the time. I think the Kovalev and Cleverly fight could be interesting. I think Cleverly needs to stick the jab. I think that's very key to him. I think he needs to keep turning Kovalev if he could. But the thing with Kovalev, I think he measured distance pretty well. So he brings his power along with his he has pretty good foot movement. He's just not like a power puncher who just swings wild. He sets up his punches pretty well, almost like Matisse. I think Kovalov is going to get inside, which I don't think Cleverly is very good on inside. He gets hit a lot, and we've seen that when he fought Maluov. I think Kovalov gets him out of there within 5 rounds. I think it's going to be but, you know, if he gets through those hard shots and he can bring Kovalov in the later rounds, we never know. But I don't think it goes past 5.
I think that's a little soon, but I still have Kovalov. I mean, I think because he's young, Cleverly, and because he can box a little bit, and he's comfortable just kind of moving away. I think that it's going to go like 8 or 9, but I think Kovalov is going to break him down. And I do see a stoppage, maybe the kind of stoppage where the corner stops it to save him for another day. But I just don't think Cleverly has enough pop. I don't think he shoots straight enough in terms of punches in order to get that respect and keep Kovalev off of him. I just don't see it. I could be wrong. He could turn and burn all night and just jab, jab, move all night. He's got to make it an ugly fight and never let Kovalev get untracked. That's his chance to win, is to box, box, box. But you look at it, and there's something that John David Jackson, the trainer of Kovalev, told me this last week, is that when you look at the media, Kovalev or Cleverly's statements, he's like, you know, my plan is to box. But then you listen to his father, and we're coming to knock him out. So which is it? Is there a consensus here? I mean, they're just kind of throwing things out there, or is there a disagreement about the game plan? I mean, there's definitely a united front in the Kovalev camp. They're coming to do their thing, and that generally means knockout. You know, just systematically break the guy down and get him out of there. So I think it's going to be a high-pressure fight. I could see 5 or 6 rounds, but I think because of the youth and the movement and the willingness to just box, I say Cleverly loses in like 8 or 9. Dave?
Oh no! I think you covered it pretty well there.
Sorry, buddy. I know we're shaking off the rust here this week.
I know.
Leave it in
the
ring. Let me you start talking so I can look for that phone number.
All right, CT. Thanks for calling, brother. I'll put you back on hold.
Right, thanks as always, CT.
Speaking about, we're gonna cover back some other fighters here. We're gonna talk Andre Berto and Soto Karas, and obviously we're gonna talk about some other cards that happened this past weekend. Hey, one guy that, you know, you can call him a quitter in the ring, but you can't call him a quitter of his career. Kermit Cintron was back on ESPN, and this guy doesn't stop. You know, he definitely still wants to keep his name out there and continue with his boxing career. Fight fans can say whatever they want about him, you know, jumping out of the ring or saying he just mentally just can't hold it together, but he really does hold it together to continue his boxing career. Kind of surprised, and, you know, out of all the fighters out there, you would think that Kermit Cintron would have kind of just, hung up the gloves and walk away from the sport already. But he hasn't done it. He has not mentally been broken down by the fans when they call him Froggy Kermit Cintron or the quitter of Puerto Rico. This guy just keeps coming and coming. He's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't understand why fight fans hate him so much. I really don't understand it. I mean, I didn't think the fight was great. But it wasn't anywhere near as bad as Twitter wanted it to be. Twitter is just kind of a whiny bitch sometimes. Wouldn't you agree? It's like everybody kind of gets on the same soapbox and they start moaning and they start like trying to out-moan each other. Oh, this is so bad that it set me on fire. Oh, really? This is so bad that, you know, it did such and such. It's just like even writing, you know, the report. I mean, I was kind of like, I felt bad because I didn't really enjoy the fight, but I almost felt like I went along with it in some sense, but I was just writing what I saw. But I just thought it didn't deserve to be piled on. It wasn't the worst fight I've ever seen. It certainly wasn't the way people act about Andre Ward fights. I don't know. I think things get a little overblown sometimes in the media, and there's a little bit of groupthink and kind of an inclusive club, you know, or let's be bad boys for the sake of being that. What's funny to me is there's never really any unity when anything real is on the line, like, you know, fighters' rights, health and safety, better testing, anything like that.
No.
It's always just, it's easy to sit in the back of the classroom, which is what Twitter really is, and
well,
just kind of lob bombs
I mean, let's throw this out there. I mean, we're talking about something like that. I mean, even bloggers and writers nowadays, you know, I mean, are they really writers and bloggers for boxing? Or is this more of an agenda of being buddy-buddy, elbow-to-elbow to fighters, you know? People, a lot of times I'm seeing write-ups about stuff that really doesn't even matter in the sport. You know, I mean, oh, so-and-so is going to have a fundraiser. So-and-so is going to do this. But what about the other things? What about the things that really, really matter for the sport, the meat of the sport, which is damaging the sport, exposing these threats and really putting it out there? But a lot of these guys are just too busy worried about not getting a call back or not getting a shout-out on Twitter. It's pretty sad nowadays.
I mean, how do we judge boring? I mean, is it on a scale of, you know, Rigo to Klitschko, or is the scale like Ward to Klitschko, you know, meaning like technically skilled but not much of a chance of a knockout versus technically skilled and a high knockout percentage, generally like at the very end after you're pulling your hair out? That would be Klitschko, you know, Ward to Klitschko. Where did that fight fall? I think we've established Kermit is able to knock people out. It's been a while and not certainly at that weight. But he showed up in shape. I thought he was active. Yeah, the punches weren't flying the whole time, but I don't know. I didn't seem to really blame him, per se, in the fight. But people just hate that guy. It's crazy to me. I'm not saying that I'm on the I hate Ward bandwagon. I've got a lot of mixed feelings about Andre Ward right now. I'm kind of confused about.
I'm really confused with Andre Ward right now, man.
Yeah, that's how I feel. It's confused.
Let's get in on Andre Berto here. You know, Andre Berto. He gets in there with Jesus Soto Carras, man. We said this. So Jesus Soto Carras is just one of those guys. He's going to apply a lot of pressure. He's going to be on top of you. He's not going to go away. You know, he's going to be there in the fight as always, and he definitely showed it, man. Andre Berto's body is just—it's just betraying him. This guy—he needs to take a long layoff. He needs to rest up, and I think that layoff of that suspension didn't do him any good. What does he need to do? I don't know. Maybe stay off the weights a little bit. I don't know what type of regimen he's doing, but if his shoulder or anything else keeps falling apart, this is a sign of retirement for the kid.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in a rush to come back. It's a tough surgery to come back from. And I just think, it's 6 p.m. It's strange. I mean, he just keeps having these injuries, you know.
Here's another thing,
The arm, the shoulder.
Right. But here's another thing too as well, is that, you know, he's got Virgil Hunter.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, a lot of and I said this before, a trainer sometimes when he's super hot, he starts picking up all these fighters, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be able to pass on the tools that he was doing with the fighter that he's made ultra successful. That's continue to make him undefeated and the best in his division. In no way, you know, and I'm a huge Hunter fan, man. Loved what he does. I think he's a very intelligent trainer. When it comes to motivational speeches, he's right there. He'll have you captured. He has your eyes and your ears locked on whatever he's saying. But here's the problem now. Is this starting to become a trend for Virgil Hunter to give speeches in the corner rather than his advice or make adjustments? Because all I heard were motivational speeches. Not adjustments and not advice of what he needed to do. He had a broken down fighter there. You know, he should have told him what he needed to do with one hand. A good trainer would have told him you need to do things off the jab. You need to stay away from him. You need to, you know, move. Don't be there. Instead, he just keep telling him, be great tonight. Be great for me. To me, it was just too much motivation, not enough information.
I don't know. I wasn't that critical of Hunter's work. I mean, other than, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough situation. You know, his arm was hurt by the third. I don't know what happened as far as, you know, did Andre want to keep going? He certainly showed a lot of heart and soul in the fight. And he kept going. You know, even if he didn't want to, his corner urged him to stay in and he stayed in.
Yeah, there's no question that he's got a lot of heart and he's going to take a beating.
Yeah, I just think, at some point, you got to realize that the right hand is what he knocks people out with, and that's gone. And you're not winning, and you're taking punishment. Maybe you do pull him out, you know, with an injury, save his pride. I mean, that's just, you know, I've never been in that situation. It's hard for me to make that call. And I wasn't in the corner, so it's hard for me to make that call. I just wonder why he keeps having these injuries, shoulder and then the arm, and why is he so bulky and so ripped up, and why is he still at 47, you know, if he's so bulky and ripped up? I mean, the lack of flexibility, I mean, maybe he needs to go up in weight, you know, maybe his body is deprived of something, and that's why the tendons and things keep coming apart. I don't know.
Well, there is a such thing that lifting weights, if that's, you know, and, you know, whatever he's doing to get that bulk or whatever, there is a such thing as doing it incorrectly where it can damage muscles, it can damage bones, it can do whatever to your body, and then you're later on you're going to end up, you know, seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I would be surprised if he took time to if he came back to the sport anytime soon. I mean, I'm not saying I've heard he's retiring, but I just think with the type of injury and just kind of other things, I'd be surprised.
How many of us want to see Diego Chavez back in the ring? Keith Thurman, man, was definitely, he was on his toes. This guy, you know what, Keith keeps impressing me a whole lot. He was getting tagged. He was getting muscled, but he kept his composure. And a lot of fighters would have fallen apart. You know, when you land some of your big shots and you're getting hit and you're getting rocked and you see a guy, you know, just kind of eating up your punches like candy, you end up getting discouraged. You end up looking at the guy like, this guy's not human. But he kept his composure. He kept the same attitude, which is throw combinations, be busy, and show him he's the guy that's supposed to shine tonight. And that's exactly what he did. Keith Thurman continues to show that he's the goods. I want to see him a lot more. Hopefully we see him one more time before the year ends. But Diego Chavez, came from Argentina. These guys just keep impressing. Just send them back in. You know what? Even with the loss with Diego, I mean with Keith Thurman, to me, there's no shame in that, man. There was no shame in losing to Keith.
No. I think in that fight, it was a great fight. I think we learned a lot about Keith Thurman. That, you know, the Quintana fight, I was like, okay, you kind of put a marker on that one. You're like, all right, that's a good win. I mean, I know Quintana retired afterwards, but somebody had to retire him, and he was a solid contender for many years, and Keith was the guy to get that done. I'm not going to fault him for that, you know, and that was kind of just one of those fights that you just, you know, you have to go through as a fighter sometimes. This fight, you know, Diego showed that he was more than what we thought. You know, we didn't know much about him.
Exactly.
Anything really, and he showed depth of character, and Thurman showed new dimensions, and he really showed one of my favorite dimensions, which is the ability to come back from a losing situation, handle adversity, and not just rely on the big one-shot bomb, but work yourself back into the fight using boxing, using a jab, kind of changing things up with your footwork and distance, and then finding a way to get the stoppage win. That's very hard to do, to take control once you've kind of lost it a little bit and are frustrated and losing round after round, and then to just right the ship, turn everything around, and then get the stoppage. That's a pick six as far as I'm concerned. That's a very rare thing. And so I'm very excited about Keith Thurman after that fight. Even though I didn't know anything about Diego Chavez, because he showed to me that that's a guy I want to see again too, like he said. So, yeah, no, I'm kind of on the Keith Thurman train in a sense. You know, he certainly proved it himself to me that, you know, anyways, I mean, not that he has to, but you know what I mean.
Well, you know, here's the thing, is anytime you get a guy that you don't know anything about, and it was pretty much similar to Marcos Medina, didn't know much about him, but when he came out with Victor Ortiz, you said, okay, I want to see a little bit more. And then you start believing that this guy can do something in the ring. Same thing with Diego Chavez. He showed me that he's got some power. He's aggressive. He's got the fighter. He's got the puncher mentality. But Keith was just that much better in the ring that night, you know, and Keith really dug in deep. And we want to see that from these young fighters. We want to see fighters, you know, go up against a wall and then say, do I go around it? Do I climb it? Or do I break through it? And what he did that night, he decided to break through it. And that's something that a lot of fighters nowadays tend not to do. A lot of them will just bump into it and just give up and fall on their asses and just say, all right, I call it a day.
And I'm talking on mute. Yeah. we're coming up pretty soon here. Wait, you want to take another caller? About 15 minutes and we'll have George Willis on. I've had a chance to read the book, and he's the author of The Bite Fight, which is the story of Tyson Holyfield 2. But it's really the story of both men and how they how their paths led to that moment, led to that fight, and where they were at that moment, plus the ramifications that, you know, they come off of it. A lot of little details here and there that you just didn't – I didn't know. It's great stuff. I'm really looking forward to the interview. Let's grab another caller and
Hi, fans. You want to call in 347-215-7598. Before we patch in another caller really quick, I want to talk about Seth Mitchell and Chris the Nightmare Ariella. Hey, that's a good fight. It's a good fight for both of these guys. Seth Mitchell, here's my big question with Seth Mitchell. Do we see the Mayhem come out as himself, you know, trying to be the big puncher? Or are we going to end up seeing a guy be more on his toes and try to avoid the bigger shots from the Nightmare?
That's going to be an interesting fight. I'm thinking Ariola by knockout. I just saw a guy that was happy
I honestly think that Ariola just knocks him out in the first round. It's kind of just steamrolls right over him, you know, because...
Really, that fast? Wow.
You know what? Well, I'm going to tell you why here. For one, that's Seth Mitchell. When we talk about development, and we're talking about Wilder, a guy's got to learn how to build his confidence. Let's be honest here. His confidence is shattered. You know, Jonathan Banks really did a number on him on both fights. Rocks him in the second fight in the rematch. And basically had him kind of just running around and trying to be somebody he's really not truly is, which is a boxer. Chris Nymer saw that. Henry Ramirez saw that. And what do you think they're going to do? You think they're going to allow this guy to try to dance? I think he's just going to come forward, and Chris is going to do what he does best, is throw a volume of punches and just be all over him. I see it being a short night. At one point, I thought it was going to be a great fight, but this is really a big question, not for Chris, but this is more of a bigger question to be answered by Seth Mitchell.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with you that he's just gonna come up and kind of punch him in the mouth and find out what the deal is. If he sets an early pace, and if Chris gets him hurt like Banks had him, he's gonna get out of there. But I think the smart thing to do would be to break him down, take away his confidence, remind him, you know, give him a reason to be afraid, and then knock him out in the third or fourth. I expect him to be a little more cautious, but we'll see. You know, because I mean, Chris kind of rushed into things in his last fight and got his nose broke and everything turned around on him. So I kind of tend to think there'll be a little more caution with him. But if you're friends with him on Facebook at all, the man is supremely confident. He just every day seems to be having a great camp. Both him and Henry seem to be in great spirits. And I expect them to get the win and to do it by knockout.
Absolutely, no. And if you're a fight fan, as you know, as we know you are, if you're listening to Leaving the Ring, hey, there's some great movies coming out. You got Hands of Stone by Roberto Duran. You have the Ray Mancini documentary that just came out, The Good Son. And then we had the Johnny Tapia documentary that came out that you witnessed yourself, Kurt Gabriel. And now I heard that Melvin Taylor, they're going to be making a movie about Melvin Taylor's career and about the night he lost to Julio Cesar Chavez. Senior, and they're looking for actors to fill in his role, and I guess the other people as well. So a lot of good things in the big screens for boxing.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I really want to see Hands of Stone. I can't wait. And The Good Son, and I already saw Tapia, which I thought was very good. I think we should probably get that director on Leaving in the Ring here in the coming weeks. That's a fun movie. I mean, I did a review of it. You know, you can just Google it. It's on Max Boxing. But Hands of Stone, I'm very curious to see how they depict everybody and what they decide to do. You know, how do they decide to tell the Nomas story? You know, because there's a lot of differing views of what's to be quit because he was frustrated. Some say he tried to kill himself to make weight. There's a lot of things that are behind that story, and I'm just curious to see how they handle that.
Hopefully they tackle some of the key points of his career, not kind of run through it, you know, just because it's the name and they know that people are going to go watch it. But here's the thing about, you know, we talk about the major fights, but there's some fights out there, man, that, like, for instance, you got Efren Esquivel, who's going to be facing Rafael Marquez, and then you got Alan Sanchez, who's going to be on about 6:30. He's going to be facing Luis Collazo. These are some great fights. There's some great fights being made out there for the fight fans. You know, both those kids have been on Leaving the Ring a few times, and they're getting their due to find out whether or not they're going to move along up the ladder. Now, Efren's, you know, he's been on the other end of being the not the victor. But this is a good challenge for himself because Marquez is a hard puncher. He's not the same of old, you know, Rafael Marquez, but he's definitely got his punch. That's the one thing that leaves a fighter is their punch. So it's going to be an interesting night for him. I'd like to get him on. We'll probably give him a ring and see if we can get him on probably next week or the following week. But these are good matches, and these are good matches to see where these fighters, upcoming fighters, where they stand and whether or not they're going to continue to move forward. So I love matches like this, and I'm pretty sure there's a few more. There's a few more in my head. I just got to, you know, scramble them all up because I'm trying to do 10 things all at once right now.
And if – yeah, I hear you, Dave. I'm doing the same thing. this is kind of an interesting show this week, trying to just get the training wheels off and shake the rust. If you're listening or you want to call in, it's 347-215-7598. You want to take another caller? We've got about 10 minutes till George Willis comes on.
Yeah, let me take another caller right now. Area code 347, you're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Area code 347, you're on live right now. What's on your mind, brother? All right, let's go with area code 510. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 510, you out there? No? Okay, let's go with I think everybody's just tuning in and listening. Don't want to talk to us today, Gabe. Area code 843. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, it's like that. I see how it is. That's
hilarious. Everybody call in 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the Leaving the Ring app to your Android or your iPhone so you can call in directly, or you can catch the archives of the radio show here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, we're back. A little rusty. I'll admit it. We're a little rusty and stuff, you know, but hey, we didn't want to miss another week here on Leaving the Ring. We wanted to be back on so that we can chop it up here, some boxing. But, of course, we got two scheduled guests that are going to be with us, which is George Willis, who's a boxing writer. And then we got Alan Sanchez, who we were talking about a little earlier, who's going to be facing Luis Collazo. So that's a really good fight. You know what? If you haven't had a chance to see Alan Sanchez, we got to see him a while back. I've seen him a few times, a matter of fact, live. But I've also seen him on Solo Boxeo. That's pretty much where you guys would have seen him. And this kid, you know, there's something about him. He's pretty special, in my opinion. You know, he's got some ways to go, but I see that he's got some ring intelligence. He's got size. Definitely he's got some dedication. He's got pop in his hands. But if he can't get you out of there, he's a kid that's going to try to box you. Sometimes the fight can be a little boring when he does that. But let me tell you this, the kid definitely has a future in the sport. Now, facing Luis Collazo, who had a great fight in his past previous fight, this is a major test. To me, this is much more of a major test for Alan Sanchez than it is for Efren Esquivel, who's going to be facing Rafael Marquez. Because like I said, Rafael Marquez is not the same. He's not the old. Luis Collazo, though, is a bit more fresher, hasn't been in those major wars like Rafael Marquez, and he's going to be teaching the kid, Alan Sanchez, a few new tricks. And those tricks is something that Alan Sanchez is going to have to endure, and he's going to have to figure out on his own. And that's when we find out truly where he stands in his career. Was he rushed? Was he not ready? Or he's ready to move to the next step? And that's where we're going to find out with Alan Sanchez.
Yes. That's the thing I don't like about this fight for Sanchez is that this is his first fight of the year. And Collazo fought in April.
Right.
So he's a guy that's you know, he's a little fresher A little sharper, I should say, because of that activity. Now, granted, that was back, you know, April 27th. Here it is, you know, August 15th. So he's not exactly the freshest, but at least he's got a fight in. And he, you know, he was only one fight removed, and it was a win from that Freddie Hernandez loss, where he didn't look quite himself, I didn't think, there at the Staples Center. So we're going to find out. I mean, you know, Colazzo at 32, you know, he's boxed 224 rounds. He's got 38 fights under his belt. He's only been stopped once in his career. I think, you know, that was very early on. So I think this is a real fight. It's a real test, and it is. It's going to show. It's going to tell Alan Sanchez exactly where he is. I mean, he's got two losses of his own, but they're early losses and they're decisions. You know, this fight, I think, you know, it's going to be. I don't know. It's going to be a tough test, man, because you look at the styles and the fact that Sanchez is kind of coming into his own and he's avenged that loss to or Demio Reyes, and he's been on a nice streak. But then there's that inactivity. That's the only big problem for me. But I think size, 6'1", the reach, 76 inches, everything says to me that he should win this, particularly youth, and just that he's on the upswing while Colazzo, you know, isn't exactly it's a very intriguing fight. I wouldn't exactly make a pick, and I wouldn't say this guy should win or that guy should win. It's just a very fun fight.
I was going to say that, you know, because to me, Luis Colazzo is he's the counterpuncher. He's a guy that can suck you into his type of fight. He's a guy that's going to make you pay for your mistakes, and he's definitely the more trickier of the two. Alan Sanchez has got to be on the top of his game. With that layoff, there can't be any ring rust getting in with Luis Colazzo. Because, for one thing, Luis is just definitely going to jump all over that. And he's going to see he's gonna see it, and he's going to do what exactly a good veteran fighter is going to do, which is he's going to attack it.
So, you know, well, Colazzo can give a few different looks. You know, he can – the Berto fight shows that, you know, he can get in there and fight, even the Freddie Hernandez fight to some extent. But but he's also, I've always thought of him more as a boxer. You know, I don't think of him much as a puncher, although he can get the stoppage. You know, it does happen for him. I think he's got 22 knockouts, something like that. But he's more of a tricky boxer that's going to make it kind of ugly for you. So I'm curious to see what kind of fight breaks out between these two. And if Sanchez is going to try to go all in and be aggressive the way he was with Artemio Reyes, or if he's going to kind of work his way into the fight and take some time. It's just an interesting fight.
I'm going to be calling in George Willis right now in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let me get the number down, and then we're going to call him in.
George Willis, I'll just read his bio. If you don't follow him, he is an award-winning sports columnist for the New York Post and a former journalist for the New York Times, Newsday, and the Commercial Appeal in Memphis. His writings also appeared on ESPN.com and in ESPN the magazine. He's a member of the BWAA, the Golf Writers Association of America, the National Association of Black Journalists, and the Baseball Writers Association of America. He's been the primary boxing writer for the New York Post for over a decade. So looking forward to getting him in here on Leave It in the Ring.
And here we go. We're going to be calling him in right now. And then shortly after, we're going to be having Alan Sanchez.
Your call has been forwarded to an...
Okay, we'll be calling him back right now.
It may take a couple.
It always takes about two or three times before they pick up. That's what happens when you do a live show. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget to download the mobile app to your Android or your iPhone. Every Thursday night at 5 p.m., Leaving the Ring goes live. We're going to be calling in George Willis one more time here on Leaving the Ring. Hopefully we can catch up with him. Should be able to get him on. Like I said, it normally takes like two or three times.
The books took me about a week and a half or so.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Willis.
No.
Nope. Did they hang up?
Yeah.
Did they pick it up and hang up? Maybe they're waiting for our call.
We'll try them again. Oh, they could have probably lost connection or something.
Hello?
Hello, can we please speak to George Willis?
Speaking.
Hi, George, this is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, man.
Hey, thank you for taking the time to come on the show here and talk to us about your book. Appreciate
it. Okay, great. Yeah.
Hey, George.
Go ahead,
hey, George. How you doing? This is Gabriel. Nice to talk to you.
Gabriel. What's going on?
I knocked the book out in about a week and a half, man. I really loved it. It was informative. It told me things about the fights that I didn't know about that fight that I didn't know before. And I guess we'll just kind of start at the beginning. Can you talk about one of the things that surprised me about the book was how similar Mike Tyson and Holyfield were. I think the public perception was always that one was like the brute and one was the gentleman, but there were ways that they were very much the same. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's probably one thing that struck me as very interesting early on. You know, when you look at Holyfield and Tyson, as you said, when they fought, it was supposedly a contrast between good and evil, Holyfield being the good guy, the religious guy, the guy who was very polite to everybody, against Tyson, who had the snarl and the growl and wanted to eat your children and all that. But actually, they both got into the game in similar fashion. Tyson was obviously a student of Gustav Mato, a guy who sought him out and saw the talent that he had and said, you know, you could be a champion one day. Same thing with Holyfield, with Carter Morgan, a guy he met at the Boys Club in Georgia, who saw him and nurtured him and told him that he could be a champion one day. And the fact that they both came through the 1984 Olympics trials and were together then, I think that sort of was a good thing that they had in common. And even if they're growing up, you know, they both have last names of men who really weren't even their fathers. So there was a lot of things that they had in common.
What surprised you the most in researching this story? How long did it take you to put this all together?
It took about 2 years from concept to completion. You know, there was a lot of interviews to be done, a proposal that was written. And then I had to shop the proposal, and once the proposal was shopped and go into contract, and then you have to write. So it took about 2 years to get it all done. And as far as the most surprising thing was probably that most people really revered Tyson. They liked Tyson, and a lot more people than you think really didn't have a lot of high regard for Holyfield. So I think that's probably what surprised me the most.
why do you think that? I mean, why do you think people felt like that?
Well, I think Tyson is very real. You know, he tells you what he thinks. He doesn't try to pretend to be something that he's not. You know, I talked to Tommy Brooks, and he said, you know, the one thing about Mike is he'll let you know how he feels. You never have to guess where you stand with Mike Tyson because he will let you know. I think with Evander, you know, you get a lot of the religious rhetoric, but then you get a lot of the, you know, he's got 11 kids by 5 different women, and how does that jive together? So a lot of people
right.
have a lot of questions about that.
Be
Mike is, you know, he's what he is, you know?
Be fruitful and multiply. Yeah, it was kind of, I guess you took that part of the Bible to heart. One of the things that characters in it, I mean, there's just so many, boxing is just such full of great characters. And Mills Lane is that third character, really, in the story of the fight. Why was he the perfect ref, do you think? Or do you think he was the perfect ref for that fight? I always felt he was.
Well, I guess it was sort of destiny, you might say, that he was in the ring for that fight. You know, Mills actually wasn't assigned to that fight until the day
right.
of the fight. You know, Mitch Halpern was scheduled to referee the rematch as he had refereed the first fight. And, of course, Tyson Camp didn't like the idea of the same ref who refereed the first fight refereeing the second fight. And so that's how Mills Lane came in. And guy with a lot of experience, a lot more experience than Mitch Halpern had. And all of a sudden he's confronted with a situation that really nobody's ever seen before in boxing. And he had to make a lot of split-second decisions as to what he was going to do. Was he going to disqualify Tyson right away after the first bite? He decided not to after talking with the doctors. And Mark Ratner, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and decided to give Tyson a second chance, which is interesting because Mills Lane, in his day job, is a district court judge. He's thrown people in jail for committing crimes and doing things the wrong way. But here he was giving Tyson a second chance in the ring, and, of course, Tyson didn't take advantage of it and decided to bite Evander on the other ear, which subsequently resulted in his disqualification.
One of the things, too, that you talk about in the book, and that fight, I remember that night clear as day. I mean, I think that's one of those Kennedy moments. Everybody knows exactly where they were, and I actually didn't watch the fight live. I was on set for a movie and stuck in a car waiting for the right light to shoot the damn thing, and somebody came in and said the fight's over, and then I found out later. Covering the fight, I mean, can you think of any other moment like this that's an equivalent to this? In all your years of covering the fight game, I mean, do you think we could ever have a moment like this? I know it's theater of the unexpected, but this seemed to be just like a perfect storm of awful.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty bad time for boxing. And like you say, I think a lot of people always remember where they were if they watched the fight. And then even people who really weren't boxing fans, you know, they heard about the fight and saw the replays and the tapes and things of that nature. So it was that kind of moment that people know exactly where they were. As far as being that kind of thing, it's hard to really duplicate. I know when I was doing the research for the book, a lot of people would bring up the Fan Man.
Right.
And what happened there that night.
I think
and
who
then,
started...
You know, and there's some other things, the riot in Madison Square Garden when
sure,
Galata
right.
and Bo were in there like that. So there's been a few things like that. But the magnitude of that fight, the heavyweight championship on the line, the two best fighters in the division, both well-known, highly anticipated, and for it to end like that, you know, I think that sets it apart from those two other events.
You know who I blame for all these type of events occurring is that guy that jumped in the ring with the Cerate and Zamora, the guy in the underwears. I think he's the one that started the trend of having these kind of weird things happen on the fight nights, you know?
He crossed some
yeah.
sort of threshold. there was something else in the fight that's another weird connection, I thought. Well, not really weird, but I guess it goes along with the territory, is Mills Lane and Mitch Halpern. Two great refs, and were both connected by the fact that they both had ref fights where somebody had later died. How do you think that affected them? I know you talk about it in the book, but you know, for those that haven't read it yet, and do you think that you could ever really truly move on from a moment like that as a referee?
I think it's very tough when something like that happens in the ring. Mitch was very. Still very young in his career when he refereed that fight and the boxer died. But I know Mitch helped him through, Mills helped him through that because Mills was actually an amateur boxer and he actually saw one of his friends die from the result of being in the ring as Mills was trying to compete for a spot in the 60 Olympics. That Muhammad Ali was in. And so when it happened to Mitch, Mills talked to him a lot about it because I think that's one of the more interesting things that sort of developed from the book that I didn't know going in was this strong connection between Mitch Halpern and Mills Lane.
Mitch
was a young referee, and Mills was his mentor. Mills lived in Reno, so when Mills would come down to Vegas to referee fight, Mitch would pick him up at the airport. And they would talk boxing, and Mitch would pick his brain, and, you know, what do I do here, what do I do there? And, you know, when the death happened in the ring that Mitch was involved in, Mills was there to really get him through that. And I think he got through that better than maybe most referees might, because he continued his career and had a really great career until the tragedy struck.
And that, did you leave the book kind of going, did you find any closure in looking into his death, into Mitch Halpern's suicide? Because it seemed in the book that, you know, while there was something so nice, a nice story about Mitch and Mills regarding the salary, I still am left with many questions regarding his death. Did you find yourself to be the same?
Yeah, really. I think I spoke to Mitch's ex-wife, Maggie, and one of the things that she told me that, you know, she said she will always believe that it was not premeditated or intended. You know, it was you know, something that happened at the spur of the moment. You know, it was not his nature to play with guns. He didn't know how to use guns or anything like that. And she thinks it was really an accident, that he never really meant to take his own life. And, you know, I quote her in the book saying that she would go to her grave believing that he did not think the gun was loaded.
Yeah, I was really struck by that. It's just so sad, you know, he's gone so soon. There was another point, too, that really, I was, when I heard that you had written the book, and I was very curious to find out about. And I didn't know that Rock Newman had asked during the bow fights with Holyfield for extra testing. I don't know if he ever got it. But Tyson did with Holyfield in the rematch, from what you were saying. Can you expound on that point a little bit? What kind of testing he asked for, and did they actually get it, and did they ever release the results? Because they agreed not to release them beforehand, as I understood what you wrote.
Right. Well, it was brought up initially early on when the Holyfield was fighting a Riddick Bowe, and Rock Newman, just being Rock Newman, you know, asked the commission, you know, are we going to do any extra testing for this bout? And, of course, the Holyfield camp went nuts. You know, what are you talking about? What are you trying to accuse us of, et cetera, et cetera? And Newman was, you know, he admits he was trying to tweak him a little bit. And basically what Holyfield decided to say when it came to the time to fight Tyson, because the subject came up again by the Tyson camp and Don King and their people, was, you know, I'll agree that you do this extra testing, but I don't want the results to be out until after the fight. You know, it's just, this is 1997, so their rules were a little loose back then as far as testing for steroids. And so basically what happened after the commotion of the fight and everything that went on, the whole idea of the testing and the results was lost in the confusion. So there really was no positive test or anything like that. Evander's never test positive,
right,
for use of steroids or anything like that. Although everybody's highly suspicious of him, there's suspicions of Mike Tyson as well.
Mm-hmm.
And even now today, you know, boxing is probably the most unregulated sport when it comes to steroid testing. So it's still a very touchy subject. You know, Rock will talk about it at no end, but Evander, of course, you know, insists that he's never taken steroids. He's totally opposed to it, as well as Tim Hallmark, his fitness trainer, who discussed it at length in the book.
So was,
yeah,
there,
he does.
Was there testing done, or they just got lost in the confusion and nothing was ever done? No, there was no
I don't
test.
Think anything was ever done. I don't think they really had a test for it. I think that was just rhetoric going into the fight.
This is 96, and 97 was the rematch, and I mean, Nevada didn't even start testing for steroids. I think they started doing a little bit of testing in like 2002, and then they really didn't make it law until like 2003. I don't even know what tests would be available in 96, 97. I mean, there'd be some, but, that's very interesting. I mean, to me, there's a whole big question mark, I think, from, I don't know, maybe the early, late 80s to, well, really till now, but really until that 2003 period, that there's careers that just went right through the radar, you know, right under the radar.
Exactly. George, let me ask you, does that kind of surprise you, though? I mean, this is Mike Tyson, and some folks, like when he fought Lennox Lewis, the refs, you know, Cotton seemed like he was more on Mike Tyson's side. I'm a bit surprised that they didn't try to test Holyfield for the sake of Mike Tyson because he asked for it.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, boxing at that time was kind of one of those sports where, you know, you do what you want to do, I'm going to do what I want to do, and, you know, we're going to meet and then we meet in the ring and see who's got the better goods. And, you know, actually, that kind of stuff still happens today in boxing. So it just sort of depends on the time and the element and what's going on. I mean, we've got so many boxers today testing positive for, you know, things we wouldn't even heard of back then, testosterone implants and this and that. And so, you know, I think back then it was still so new, nobody really wanted to get involved with it, sort of like baseball almost, you know.
Yeah.
They almost wanted to ignore it and didn't know exactly how to go about it, how do we test for this, and what are the ramifications and the penalties and things like that. So, you know, they had basically a hands-off approach to it.
Nowadays, it almost seems they have a hands-on approach in terms of what's going on in Nevada. Just with, I don't know if you cover also MMA or if you're just strictly boxing, but it seems like those guys are allowed to use testosterone. They get 2Es all the time for it, therapeutic use exemptions, and things are a little haywire, it seems, in the sport. For you, you know, I'm an internet writer, and I think, you know, the editorial process is much different than somebody that's writing for the New York Post and all the different venues that you've written for over the years. I'm curious, you know, do they, at that top level, I mean, it seems like papers barely care enough about boxing anymore. Like, we've been kind of marginalized in print, at least in newspaper. Do they care about pushing the PED stories, or at the top level? Or how is boxing, I guess, viewed from a newspaper perspective, as opposed to like the internet, where a lot of people, that's how I make my living, and I'd only write about that?
Well, the print industry is really starting to get away from boxing.
Yeah.
I remember when I started in 2001, 2002, when you go to a big fight, you would have a paper from Chicago and Dallas and LA and San Francisco and, you know, just about every major big city, Miami. You know, now you go and it's usually just New York and L.A. are at the fights. And the rest are, like you said, internet people, ESPN, Yahoo, the various basically fight internet sites. They're the people that are there. And so print has budget cuts and costs and things like that have escalated. Boxing has been one of the first sports that they've sort of crossed off their list and decided not to spend money on. How much has it hurt the sport? That's hard to say because, you know, the word still gets out about fights. Everybody's basically on the internet now. It's probably the predominant medium, or it's going to be anyway, for the future. So, you know, it's not necessarily killing the sport. I know they would like to see more boxing in newspapers. I'm certainly working hard at the New York Post to keep it alive there. And, you know, but I think boxing will survive. But I think the print industry is sort of turning away from it.
Yeah, I mean, it just there's not a lot of advertising dollars in what we do. Do you think that's because probably we've marginalized our sport by taking it to Vegas away from the local venues and taking it off network TV and moving over to cable, even though it doesn't seem like there's really any such thing as regular TV anymore. Everything's kind of cable. But in some sense, do you think that's part of the problem?
Yeah, that's part of the problem. And another part is your heavyweight champion, you know, lives in Germany or the Ukraine or wherever he's living nowadays. And you don't have those marquee fighters that we used to have with Tyson and Holyfield and Holmes and Shavers, and, you know, you go on and on and on back in the day where boxing was just on your television on Saturday afternoons. And, you know, even the big pay-per-view fights that they used to have early on, you had these terrific fighters that everybody knew their name, Aguayo and Pryor and people like that, and you couldn't wait to see them get in the ring. You don't really have that anymore. I think the talent is there. You know, you look at some of the fighters today, I think they could compete with any of the fighters back in the day, so to speak. But there's just so much on television about football, basketball, baseball, on and on and on, 24/7. Boxing really hasn't been able to get in there anywhere. Every now and then when Floyd fights, they'll give it some attention. But if Floyd's not fighting, they don't really want to give it much attention. They want to go right back to baseball, what's going on with A-Rod and the PEDs and who's playing who and now football. So it's all about that. So the discussion is never about boxing anymore. It's about all these other sports.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Deontay Wilder, Dave and I were talking about this earlier, if Deontay Wilder becomes that guy, you know, 6'7", 84-inch reach, well-spoken guy, Olympic pedigree, do you think he could become the guy and lead us back? Or do you think it's going to take one fighter? I mean, I'm looking at all the Golden Boy stuff that's going on, too, and that interests me. I wonder where that's taking the industry. I mean, in any other sport, it would almost look like a monopoly, what's kind of forming over there. But you still got Bob.
I mean, that's true. And I think that's probably what you're going to see from now on. I don't think we're ever going to get back to the Tyson days where there's going to be a boxer dominating the back pages of all the sports pages. I think you're just going to have hardcore boxing fans who want to see good boxing and know who the fighters are, and that's the way it's going to be. You know, it's going to be a niche sport, whatever you want to call it, but I think that's the way it's going to be. Boxing fans know where the good fights are. They know who the good fighters are, and they're still making money doing that on the major level. What's hurting is the local fight shows, things of that nature. But even they still do well. You know, Broadway Boxing here in New York still does well. They have another boxing promotional company in the Bronx. They do pretty well. But I don't think it's ever going to be part of the mainstream sports attention anymore like it used to be.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
Hey, let me ask you real quick, George, because, you know, during your process of getting and doing your research and getting the interviews, which one of the interviewers were the most difficult to get a hold of or the most that didn't want to give too much information? I mean, I don't know. I just kind of get the sense that a lot of them probably from Mike Tyson's camp, they kind of didn't want to talk about it anymore. They kind of hoped they went away. Did you get that sense, or did they give you that feed?
Well, not really. I mean, Mike was very cooperative. I probably talked to Mike 3 or 4 times about the book. I also was at his premiere of The Undisputed Truth. I think that was pretty fortunate because, you know, he was doing his one-man show. He wanted some publicity about that. So I was able to connect with him basically through that channel. You know, I'm going to interview you about your one-man show, but I'm also going to ask you about the bite fight. And so once I interviewed him a couple of times about his show, then I was able to interview him about, you know, the book I was doing, and he was very cooperative with that. He did the forward, as you probably know, and he even came down to New York City a couple of weeks ago for a book launch we had. Evander was a little bit different. It was a little more difficult to connect with him. In fact, I'll tell you the story about how I did it. I was in Vegas for the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, I think it was, Pacquiao-Bradley. And I had trouble connecting with him, and all of a sudden I'm in Vegas, and I'm going down to the casino, and something told me as I left the room, you know, grab your tape recorder and put it in your pocket. So I did. I put my tape recorder in my pocket. I went down to the casino, and the first thing I see is Evander taking pictures with fans. down on the casino floor. So I said, okay, there he is. So let me go up to him and ask him. I went up to him and I said, you know, I'm doing this book on the bite fight, and if you have time, maybe we could meet for breakfast in the morning and I can talk to you about it. He said, well, why don't we go up to my room right now? So we actually, at that moment, went up to his suite, and I talked to him for about 3 hours. And that's the only time I talked to him for the book, was that three-hour sit-down. But, you know, he gave me a lot of information about, you know, how he got started in the sport and him wanting to fight Tyson to the point where it became an obsession, you know, winning the title, losing the title, and then the aftermath and what was going on in his life. At that particular time, there was a lot of stuff in the news about him, you know, being behind on child support payments and stuff like that. So,
right.
He was very forthcoming on that as well. So those 3 hours, I got a lot of information out of Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, that's all that stuff was fascinating. Even, you know, there's the lore of Buster Douglas, that people always talk about his mother passing away, but he got to his lady left, his wife left him too. I mean, that, I don't think anybody could be more hard luck than Buster Douglas was heading into that first Tyson, you know, into his Tyson win. That was a detail that I wasn't aware of. There's a lot of little stuff in the book that I think people are really going to enjoy. It's a fascinating read, you know, and just for a boxing writer and kind of wondering, like Dave was, you know, who was the hardest to get and how did you put all this together? Tremendous job, man. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate that, you know, and I mean, there was a lot to the story. I mean, the bite fight probably occurred over what, you know, in a matter of seconds. It was a 3-round fight, so.
Yeah.
A lot of people were like, how are you going to write a book about something that, you know, happened in a matter of seconds? But, you know, you get into it, and the best thing about boxing, it's about people, personalities, and characters. And, you know, if you walk up to somebody and say, you know, what did you think of the bite fight? What were you thinking at the time? And they always have a story. And you compile all those stories together. I think that's what makes it a very interesting read.
Absolutely,
yes, certainly,
man. Absolutely. George Willis here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I appreciate it again, man, for coming on and talking to us about your book. I highly recommend fight fans, hardcore fight fans, go out and get it and support it. George, again, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. And I would say support the book, not just for myself, but, you know, when I was shopping this book, a lot of publishers said, you know, boxing doesn't sell. Nobody buys boxing books, so... You know, not just myself, but other authors out there, other people
yeah.
want to write about other fighters. You know, I think if this book does well, maybe publishers will take notice and we can get a lot of good boxing books out there.
Yeah, without question. I was in the sports section the other day, just walked into a random bookstore, and there just wasn't enough boxing books. And being a writer, I'm like, there's a lot of great stories out there.
Tons of great
exactly.
stories out there. All right. Well, George, thanks again, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Anytime, guys.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
George Willis here on Leaving the Ring Radio discussing the bite between Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. We're going to be calling in Alan Sanchez, but hey, go out and support the book. Just like you said, you know, I hate to hear that. You know what? Here goes. Let me bring out the shoebox just one more time. I get up at 4 in the morning every day, and I get my cup of coffee. If I have to, I set to stop and get some gas. Then I get on the road and I head to work. And between that time, it takes me about an hour to get to work every day. Between that time, I got to turn on the radio because I don't have satellite radio. I just got regular, traditional, terrestrial radio, right? Like most guys do, blue-collar fellas. And I got to tune in and listen to the only talk show out there available because... I can't listen to Montanelli, who's from the barrier, from the bone. I can't listen to Howard Stern because he's on Sirius. I only get a chance to watch him on demand. And I can't even listen to the big boy. I don't even know if he's on anymore. But I have to listen to these guys called The Bob and Tom Show, which if you've ever listened to The Bob and Tom, you got to literally be 60 and up to understand or even get their jokes. It's just that terrible. And they started talking about boxing. And... they start talking about Vladimir Klitschko having his fight coming up and that it took 3 years to finally both of these guys to sign on to fight each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'll shorten it up real quick because we got to call in Alan Sanchez. But then they take a jab at the sport, saying like, well, this is the reason why boxing is where it's at and it's falling apart and it's never going to be where it needs to be. Everybody forgot about boxing because these fighters take so long to sign. And, man, I had the biggest urge, Gabriel, to call in and just say, listen, if you don't know nothing about our sport, can you please not speak about it? Just shut it. Because there's plenty of great fights out there. We just saw a great set of fights this past month, and we're going to have another great set of fights this month. Anyways,
yeah,
just wanted to throw that in.
It's just been nonstop. You know, there are plenty of good fights to be had right now. It was interesting. At the beginning of the summer, people were like, it's going to be brutal. There's nothing going on. But there's been some nice little wars. And you know, despite how I may feel about Golden Boy or they may feel about me, I'm told that I'm not getting a credential for Canelo versus Mayweather, whatever. But they've been doing a good job of putting on some action fights. And, you know, this weekend, I would say that I'm very excited about the Johnson Romero fight versus Kiko Martinez. I think that's a really tough fight. I mean, I haven't really picked a winner in it. You know, I like Martinez in it, but Romero, you know, I also like him. I mean, it's kind of a 50-50 fight for me, leaning a little more towards Martinez as the week goes on. But, you know, Diorme versus Frankie Figueroa should be interesting. Gil versus Barker, it's kind of interesting that these are two guys that, I don't know if people would consider them, you know, HBO headliners, but Gil has basically fought his way into the middleweight picture by picking up a belt and continuing to defend it, defending on home soil. Now he's coming onto foreign soil to do it, but as the A-side, that's a fun fight. There's good things happening. And then the cleverly Kovalev fight, that's going to be fun. So, I don't know. Even the Juan Diaz fight, De Jesus, I don't know. That's a fight that I'm kind of interested in. Sergio Thompson fighting this weekend also, you know, and then we come right back with, you know, Danny Jacobs on Monday versus Giovanni Lorenzo, which is an interesting fight.
Exactly. It's a really interesting fight. Here's the thing is that this is what I think, you know, like the other day I was just going through my DVDs and no, I don't sell them. I was putting on some fights that think about this. If there was no Riddick Bowe, if there was no Galata, if there was no Morrison, none of these guys, a lot of these guys would have been overlooked, which was a great fight. You had Balbi versus Doreen. Awesome fight. 12 rounds of just brutality. These guys went at it. Blood all over the place. But when I hear guys just say, you know, well, boxing's dead because there's no heavyweights, my point is this. It's like, listen, if you're one of those idiots that go in and order the same food every single day and say there's nothing else out there, well, you're really cheating yourself out of living. You know, because if you don't explore and you don't experiment and look a little bit deeper, you're missing a lot. So if your only thought that boxing is just heavyweights, God, you miss so much of a great sport. And I feel really bad for you.
Yeah, I mean, those aren't really boxing fans. They were fans of a boxer. That's a different thing, you know.
And absolutely.
Here we go with Alan Sanchez.
And we're calling in Alan Sanchez right now. So if you're one of those guys that just buy pizza all the time and say, well, you know, there's nothing else that's good that come from Italians. Jeez, there's a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
Let's hello.
Hello.
Hello. Can I please speak to Alan Sanchez?
Yeah, it's me.
Alan.
How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man? This is Dave Duenas with Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, welcome back to the show, man. I really appreciate you taking the time and talking to us here.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for your time. Next time you want to interview me, have an interview with me, talk to Ernesto Torres first.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, hey. If you want to say hi to you.
Oh, okay. Yo, yeah. I know. Yeah, man.
You know him?
Yeah,
I know, bro.
That's my buddy. Yeah, man. Tell him to back down. Back off. Hey, Alan, first off, you know, I've always ranted about you, man. I think you're the goods. You know, every time I see you, and I've thrown this on Twitter and even mentioned other people, I think you're by far one of the best prospect fighters out of the Bay Area, you know, out of Fairfield, California. What I've seen of you is there's been some truth to you. Now, you got this big fight here with Luis Collazo, and me and Gabriel were breaking down this fight here for a moment. And Gabriel threw out a very good question here, is that you haven't been active. How do you feel about the inactivity? Why were you inactive? And your first comeback back in the ring is going to be against Luis Collazo. How's the confidence there?
Well, first of all, I want to thanks, you know, like Golden Boy and my manager, Jorge Moron, and, you know, it's been a long time, yeah, but, you know, I've always been training, you know, they always tell me, like, oh, you're fighting in this month, so I always prepare for that month, and I didn't fight, but, you know, I was ready, you know, and I feel good, so, you know, my condition is great, so I feel good, you know, fighting Luis Collazo or whoever.
What do you think about Luis Collazo and where do you rate him right now in his career against yours?
Well, you know, Luis Collazo have a lot of experience and I saw his last fight and, you know, he looks pretty good and everything. So, you know, I'm training very hard for him because, you know, it's going to be a hard fight for me. So, you know, he looks great, you know, for me. Like, I know he's gonna come strong and everything, but I will be ready for that.
What's the official weight for the fight? What's the contracted weight? Is it 47 or is it above that?
Yeah, it's 147. What's the weight?
That should be interesting, just because Collazo is generally, I mean, he's fought at 47 most of his career, but he's also gone up to 54 and then come back down. So you should have some sort of an advantage there with him having to drain to make weight. For you, you know, you've been on a nice streak, you know, going back to the Artemio Reyes fight where you were able to avenge that loss and do it in spectacular fashion. Then you went 10 rounds in your next fight. How are you feeling heading into this fight? Even like Dave said, you haven't fought since December of last year. Have you just been in the gym just staying fresh? How have you been preparing yourself all this year for this fight?
Well, I'm preparing very hard, like I say, you know, like they always tell me, like, hey, you're fighting in February, so, you know, I trained hard for that month, so it didn't happen, so they tell me, like, hey, you're fighting in April, so.
Well, I mean,
so
like.
I get ready for April, and like that, they keep telling me that, so, you know,
I mean,
was training.
I mean, like, do you have to stop training? Like, say they say, you know, we're fighting in February, you get ready, then you find out you're not. Do you have to take time off from that in order and then kind of start all over again? Or what do you do?
Not really. You know, like, I don't really have a time off or something. You know, I was, like, running and I was, like, doing mountain bikes.
You're like a machine. You know, I follow you on Instagram, and I swear, man, you're either with Diaz or you're in marathons. Like, you're always doing something. I mean, I saw the picture of you just the other day that you posted. You're chiseled. I mean, you're in shape.
Yeah, like I say, you know, like, I was, like, doing something. Like, you know, Nick Diaz, he called me. He asked me if I want to do a triathlon. So I was, like, thinking about it. I was, like, kind of worried about it because, you know, a triathlon is it's a hard thing, you know. But I was like, okay, let's do it. So I just go with Nick Diaz, and we just did it, you know, and it was fun. And I feel great after that, you know, like, after that, it's for me right now, boxing is easy because, you know, like, a triathlon, it's a hard thing. You know, like, swimming, bike, then running. So it's a lot of work.
But is that kind of nice to mix it up? Because I know boxing training can get a little monotonous or boring, just doing the same thing over and over again. Was it nice to kind of compete in something else and kind of change it up?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, that's why, you know, I bought a mountain bike, so I can, you know, on the weekends, I can just, you know, go places and ride my bike. And I also, you know, do, like, half marathons and 10Ks. Like, like running races, and you know I have like first place, so you know I have a good condition.
What do you think when you look at Colazzo is going to be the biggest challenge about him? Is it his experience, or is it anything that you've seen while watching him on tape?
Well, I see him like very strong. You know, like he looks good in his last fight. You know, like I saw him knock him out other guys, and you know he looks fast and everything. So you know I'm preparing for everything. You know, I'm having a good sparring, and you know, so I'm getting ready for the best Colazzo.
You know, now we know you're in condition. And I think what my partner was trying to get around, well, not get around, but get his question in was this, Alan, is you're in great condition, but what about preparations and sparring? Who are you sparring with? I know sparring the Diaz brothers is not the type of sparring you're going to have to bring to par when you face Luis Colazzo. Has training camp started for you, and has sparring partners been picked out for you so that you can be prepared for Luis Colazzo?
Oh yeah, like I've been sparring some softball guys. I went to Stockton, so I sparred some kid over there, and he have like five professional fights. I don't even know his name, but you know, like he looked good. He was fast, and we did like eight rounds. And but you know, I still like working. You know, like boxing. And tomorrow I have some sparring with other guy in San Francisco. But yeah, sparring. It's you know, it's I have a sparring partner.
Why Texas? Why did you guys agree on fighting up there? Why not in the Bay?
I don't know. I wish it was like in California. You know, I don't want to go over there. But you know, it's whatever. Like,
but I gotta tell you,
if they want me to fight in New York, I'll fight in New York.
Hey, I gotta tell you though, the Tejanos, they show up, man, for the fights for boxing. They really do come out and support the sport, and they make it look like it's a lot of fun. So big up for the Texans, and hey. I think it's going to be a fun night for you.
Yeah, like I said, I'm excited for that, for my fight and everything. And well, I'm gonna go to Texas, and I'm gonna like you know see something else, like you know like other state. I think it's gonna be fun over there.
Yeah, I think so. It's gonna be you know it's an interesting state to fight in. You know they don't have the greatest regulations in the world. But I think everything's kind of in your favor in this fight, just youth, size. I mean, you've got that long reach. You know, you're only 22 years old, and you physically seem to be coming into your own. Do you feel like you're getting stronger, like you're becoming more of a man at this point in your career?
Oh, yeah, like I feel like stronger every day. Like, you know, when I spar guys, they're always like, man, you hit hard. I'm like, really? I'm not even enough. But like they say, I'm getting harder, and I think I'm getting big too. Like you know, I feel like more, I'm like more muscles and everything. So you know, I feel strong.
What do you think's changed most about you as a boxer in your career? You know, you've had a couple early losses, but there were decisions, and you know, like I said, you avenged your loss to Artemio Reyes. What's changed most about you?
I think, like, more aggressive. Like, you know, before I used to, like, box them. Then, like, right now, you know, I just want to fight, you know, like, but smart, you know, like, trying to fight smart. And I think I have the power to knock them out people.
When this fight was made, Alan, were you... Was Luis Colazzo picked as the opponent, or were you picked as the opponent? How did it go?
I not even know. They just I was gonna fight in August 24 in Anner Mares undercar, but you know my manager tell me if I wanna fight in September 2nd in Fox Sport number 1 or something like that. I was like sure, like why not?
I'm not even know who
I was gonna fight. Then he's like, "Oh, we're fighting Luis Colazzo," and I'm like, "Oh, really? Damn. Okay, we take it."
Wow. So
that's a fight.
Let me ask you this, because you know we've seen two sides of you. We've seen you be aggressive with power, but then we've seen you box. With Luis Collazo, do you try to box the boxer, or do you try to out-muscle him and you know, show him your youth and your strength in this fight?
I think, you know, the first 5 rounds, I think he's going to try and put pressure to me. So, you know, I'm going to try boxing a little bit. But, you know, we'll see in the fight, like, if, like I said, like, in the first 5 rounds, I think he's going to put pressure. And then after that, I think he's going to start getting tired. So that's when I'm going to start work, you know, like, that's when I'm going to put work and put impression to him. But, you know, we'll see how the fight happens. And, you know, maybe I'll start putting pressure in the first round. And, you know, we'll see. It depends how he starts.
Well, man, I'm really excited to see the fight, and you know, it's a little ways off. So, and we both are Bay Area guys, Dave and I, well, Northern Cal guys. So, hopefully, we get to see you in the gym, and you know, kind of see you train up close. But thank you for stopping by the show, man. As always, you're a fun interview.
Thank you for you guys to have me and, you know, on their show and you guys' show, and thank you for your time, and just thank you, and don't miss my fight. And
oh, not going to miss it. We're not going to miss it, brother. And yeah, we're definitely going to be rooting for you. You know, we don't have a pick yet. I got to tell you the truth here, Ellen. This is such a – to me, it's a major test for you. Along with Luis Collazo, it tells us exactly where he's at in his career. But it's going to tell us a lot about where you're at, of your progression and stuff. So this is a good fight, man. I mean, this is a really great fight for you. So, you know, we're going to keep our fingers crossed for you.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's going to be a great fight for me and, you know, for my career. So,
absolutely.
You know, I can't wait.
I can't wait, too, man. Hey, again, thanks again, man. Millions here on Leaving the Ring Radio. We have Ellen Sanchez.
All right, thank you. Thank you, guys. And, you know, sorry for my English. It's kind of sucks, but...
Oh, no, it's great, dude.
I hope you guys understand me.
No, it's good. It's good. All right, man. Thank you again.
All right, thank you. Thank
Talk
you. Bye.
All right.
No problem. That's awesome. I have a feeling I know where he's sparring tomorrow, Dave. I don't know if you're free, but maybe you should come on out.
Come out of my little cubbyhole here.
Yeah, I'll tell you off air. But I have a funny feeling that if you say you're sparring in San Francisco, there's pretty much one spot. So
right.
yeah, that should be interesting. That I would like to see. There's yeah, we'll talk off the air. Should I get into the
get our fight
schedule?
Yeah.
We're only going till 7 tonight, folks, so just letting you know. We're just kind of shaking off the rust, and we'll be back with more guests and more fun and more controversy next week. And I promise I'll be angrier. This week I just had a little bit of the wind knocked out of my sails. Friday, August 16th, at U.S. Cellular Field, Chicago, Illinois, on ESPN2, Friday Night Fights, Andres Funfaro, I'm not even saying his name right, but Funfaro versus Gabriel Campillo, light heavyweights, 10 rounds, Arthur Spilka versus Mike Mallo, rematch, heavyweights. I just like the names Spilka and Mallo next to each other. I think the fight's going to be fun. It should be, you know, just kind of a rough and tumbled affair, as all Mike Mallo and Spilka fights are. If Campillo's right, I think he wins. If he's not, Fanfara's going to be all over him like a cheap suit. I'm betting that Fanfara's going to be all over him like a cheap suit. Dave?
You know what? I'm sorry. I got caught up in Twitter.
Well, that's all right, man. You do your Twitter thing, and I will roll through this fight schedule. At the Revel Resort in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on HBO/Sky Sports, Daniel Gill versus, or Gill, depending on how you pronounce it, versus Darren Barker, middleweights, 12 rounds for Gill's IBF title. Jonathan Romero versus Kiko Martinez, super bantamweights in action, 12 rounds for Romero's IBF title. Thomas DeLorme versus Frankie Figueroa, junior welterweights, 10 rounds, airing on HBO Latino. At the Motor Point Arena in Cardiff, Wales, HBO/Box Nation. Nathan Cleverley is also on that card with Sergey Kovalev, light heavyweights, 12 rounds for Cleverley's WBO title. At the Laredo Energy Center in Laredo, Texas, Uno Mas, Juan Diaz versus Adelton De Jesus, lightweights, 10 rounds, And that, my friends, that was all Saturday. Sorry, I didn't make that day transition. That, my friends, is your weekend fight schedule. However, there's Monday fights. The Best Buy Theater in New York, New York. Fox Sports 1, Daniel the Golden Child Jacobs versus Giovanni Lorenzo. Middleweights in action, 10 rounds. Eddie Gomez versus Steve Upshur Chambers, junior middleweights, 8 rounds. And Marcus Brown versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson, light heavyweights. And that, my friends, is your weekend fight schedule.
Okay, like we said, we're going to end it at 7 o'clock today, so I'm just going to give my final thoughts. I appreciate everybody tuning in to Leaving the Ring Radio. We'll be back next week, but here's something I wanted to mention real quick. Victor Conte was on Rome show, you know, Rome is Burning, Jim Rome, and a lot of people have always thrown out some questions about Victor Conte, and they've even emailed us here on Leaving the Ring of why we defend him or why, you know, why we do we seem like we're on his side. Here's the thing. A guy that has been a suspect in a lot of people right now, even right now on Twitter, from writers, the blogs, the fans, keep saying not to trust this guy or not believe him. But he is putting himself out there. He's accessible, and he keeps repeating the same story over and over. Nothing's really changed. If you have listened to him in the past on Leaving the Ring to any other show, it's pretty consistent. And that's why we question Memo Heredia. Memo Heredia doesn't want to get out of his little cubby hole and answer some really tough questions. So I just want to throw out my thought about it because I did get an email this past weekend asking me if I watched the show, Jim Rome show on Showtime. And I said, yes, I did. And again, I'm not defending him. I'm defending the facts that he presents. And that's what I like about Victor Conte is the fact that he's willing to talk, not willing to hide like some folks. Anyways,
well, let me add to that, too. I mean, I guess you kind of threw me a left, threw me for a loop there. I didn't know you were going there. But, you know, that interview was actually cut in half, too. There was other stuff that he talked about. He did mention, and somebody that follows me today mentioned it, too, that he talked about boxers have come to him looking for PEDs, and he's turned them down. He didn't say who they were, but he said big-name boxers. I think people should be asking who those people are. I'm kind of wondering.
I was wondering.
Yeah, and I think too, you got like you said consistency of character, and yeah, he juiced, and I actually spoke with him yesterday, and I said this to him, like, if there's one thing that bothers me about you, about what you did, it's the Mosley De La Hoya 2 fight. Everything else, I really don't care about baseball and their records and home runs. I think it's really hypocritical the way MLB. Acts. I mean, they act like these are the only guys when they catch somebody that are doing things and, hey, we're cleaning things up. I mean, Bud Selig declared steroids over many years ago. Oh, the era is behind us. And here we are with Biogenesis, and then Biogenesis teaches us that it's actually easier than ever, and so does the MMA in Nevada, that it's easier than ever to get testosterone. What Balco taught us and what happened after Balco, if people paid attention, was the law has changed, and guys went from the undetectable. Instead, they went to just the old school way of cycling off and using testosterone and EPO. And what I told Victor was that was the thing that I didn't like, was that you helped a combat athlete win a fight in the back end. And this is what's interesting about that fight is that despite being on a Balco program and having EPO in his system, Shane Mosley won exactly the same way as he won the first fight with Oscar De La Hoya. People always say, like, he didn't look that good in the second fight. And that's true. He didn't look as good as he did in the first fight. But I think since that happened, since, you know, he went to jail, and it's interesting that people will point to the 90 days that Floyd did as, you know, in his behavior after, oh, he's changed because of jail. Victor went to jail for 4 months, and he had 4 months of house arrest. And he's had his name kind of ruined by Balco, or at least tainted, and he's had to kind of work his way back. In 3 weeks, roughly 2 weeks actually, it'll be September 3rd, will be the 10-year anniversary of Balco. And since that time, he said the same things. These are the drugs, these are the problems, these are the tests, this is how you catch everybody. Over and over and over again, he was prescient about Jamaica. He was prescient about, like, Melky Cabrera. When that went down and talked about something more is going to happen, and then boom, Biogenesis breaks the next year. He's prescient about a lot of things. I think people need to start to let his past be the past and actually pay attention to not just his future, or his present, but his immediate past, which has been, you know, since 2003, talking about anti-doping. He's met with USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, which sets the policies for everybody, and many other organizations, including MLB. So people just need to, like, get the facts right about the guy and start like, well, I have an opinion that maybe differs from yours. Or, you know, I'm looking at facts just a little bit different. You know, actually, believing something that's wrong is just believing something that's wrong. It's not having an opinion. Facts are facts. And his track record speaks for itself. It's very annoying that I've been painted as somebody that's kind of a defender of his, and that's a bad thing, as well as this show and Dave, when really we're kind of sticking to the facts. And when you compare all that, and then you look at Memo Heredia, and you go, where are your science papers? Where's the lawsuit that you said you filed last November, or the one that you said you filed against me earlier this year? Haven't been served. Really strange, because it took me months to move, and you know, I did do a change of address. Haven't been served. Where are all these things? And this alias woman, uncaged or whatever, that keeps harassing and accusing Victor of giving steroids to Omar Henry, bring your proof, because that's libel in print. That's defamation of character. Bring your proof, other than a photo of a guy wearing a snack shirt or a relative of his holding up a snack shirt. I know the story, and eventually I'll write it when I get everybody to talk to me on record about Omar Henry. I cannot wait to write that story. It's actually kind of my favorite story going right now, the sad, tragic life of Omar Henry. Rest in peace. But people that use that stuff to attack Victor Conte, they need to be very, very careful, because the spy game and finding out who you are, that game works both ways. That's all I got. Dave, you got me a little riled up at the end of the show, so there's a little dark cloud for you.
Again, our agenda here is to say the truth and talk boxing, as well as – I didn't have a chance to talk about Omar Figueroa. We only got a few more minutes, but just really quick, Omar Figueroa is an exciting fighter. But one big criticism I have for him, and that's for Joel Diaz, who I also appraise a whole lot. Footwork. They need to work on his footwork. That's why he was getting hit so much in his last fight.
Yep.
Going in with John Molina Jr., his footwork's going to have to be up to par, or he's going to get knocked out.
He's going to get knocked out if he's not careful. I mean, he's resilient and everything, but man, either that or he's going to have a short career. That's brutal what he went through.
The kid, he's exciting. He throws punches after punches, but he can take them. But like I said, footwork. That's the one thing that a lot of people, they just tend to forget as a fighter, is footwork. It's boxing 101. Learn your footwork.
Here's another thing I'd say, and that fight happened in Texas, and the fights we're talking about are happening in Texas. Texas, you need to clean your act up. They're not doing real steroid testing over there. You got a lot of fights going through there. Got a lot of older fighters, a lot of younger fighters, a lot of lives on the line. Texas, is totally on you. You need to clean up your act. It's going to get ugly for you.
Big time. Anyways, thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to Leaving the Ring Radio. See you. Talk to you guys next week on Thursday night, 5 p.m. Have a good night. Remember, don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer.
Peace.